BBC Six Music Podcasts.
Six Music.
This is a free download from the BBC.
Find out more at bbc.co.uk/sixmusic.
And now, Adam and Joe.
Adam.
Jojo.
Adam. Dum 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 dum.
Jojo. Jojo.
Adam.
Jojo.
Adam.
Jojo.
I've been ejected from the space podule.
Blimey, that was exhausting. I just sucked in most of outer space.
Yeah, that was from Nick and Ollie Rushton, aged 18 and 15 respectively. Mm. Here's the email they sent in. Dear Adam and Joe, I think you should do your names as the Space Odyssey opening. Incidentally, that track is called Also Sprach Zarathustra. I think it's by Holst. By the way, I love your show and I wake up every Saturday at 9 to listen to you. I've only recently been in possession of a DAB radio alarm, so I've only recently become a member of Black Squadron. But I do all the challenges that have been set so far. Egg in Mouth was my favourite. P.S. It was my idea to do the tune, says Nick. And I'm only putting my brother's name so that he can be mentioned on the radio. He loves your show as much as
is
me.
Is Nick the older one or the younger one?
Nick is the older one.
The older one.
I think. PSS. He goes for PSS rather
nice.
Than PPS.
Good.
Keep up the great jingles. I love them so much. I find myself singing, I like to listen to Adam and Joe, but I listen to the podcast, not the live show,
hey,
over and over in my head.
Thanks for reminding me. You know, that's the Retro Text the Nation jingle that you may or may not hear later in this podcast. That's a sort of choral affair. Mm-hmm. You know what I would love? In the same manner as people send us in remixes of the Text the Nation jingle, I would love a local community choir. Mm-hmm. To cover that jingle.
Right.
I think it would be perfect. You could have all the different voices with different people from the community, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker could all have...
You're really going to get the candlestick maker?
Well, I think he's on holiday,
after
actually.
What he done last summer.
What did he do last summer?
I don't even... can't mention it on the podcast. It's disgusting.
Disgusting.
Those candles are obscene.
he's sticking the candles. anyway, wouldn't that be wonderful?
That'd be brilliant.
That'd be brilliant. Brilliant.
That'd be brilliant.
A sort of a church hall type thing.
That would be a good project.
We'd definitely play it.
No, that would bring the community together.
It really would.
If there had been problems in the community.
Like if there was a proper Welsh voice choir, a Welsh male voice choir.
Doesn't singing, have to be Welsh, though,
singing
right?
the Retro Text the Nation jingle. No, I'm just suggesting, you know,
sure.
the more of a sense of unity and communal coming togetheringtonness.
That's the right word, isn't
it? Yeah.
Be nice if the town was actually called Coming Togetherington.
Well, if we use their jingle thing, we'll rename it that and there'll be a big ceremony and everything. There won't. That was a lie.
Anyway, thanks Nick Rushton and Ollie Rushton. His final PSSS.
Are they related to Willie, do you think?
I don't know, maybe. If they're geniuses, perhaps. He says, hope the email wasn't too long. And there's a smiley emoticon. Don't worry, that was just perfect. Thank you so much, Nick and Ollie. Bye-bye, love you, bye, he says at the end of the message.
Wow, how many subclauses can an email have?
I mean, that was a record number of subclauses, especially as he's going for PSSS rather than
PPP. Post-script.
Post-script.
Makes a certain amount of sense.
So, folks, thank you so much for joining us for another podcast. How did you feel the show went this week, Joe?
I feel it was all right, you know. I never can tell.
No.
It's a mysterious chemistry that happens when James puts the podcast together. Sometimes something that felt like a shoddy show will be brilliant. Right. Sometimes vice versa.
Right, this week.
Well, a shoddy show, you thought it was
a bit
shoddy. It's a bit piecemeal.
It was a bit blah.
We didn't have any tentpole flagship events, did we?
No.
But you never know.
But you know what? It was one of those shows where we were saved by the listeners.
Well, that's the name of the game these days.
Yeah, they sent in some really good stuff.
They did.
So we'll be back halfway through for Retro Text the Nation. Until then... here's the podcast.
Are you ready for the Adam and Joe podcast? Made with little nuggets from their radio show. Mildly amusing mini moments from the past. Beautifully preserved in super stereo. 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 Everybody.
Listen, we were talking about Mr. Bowie, and I think we were talking last week about how excited we'd be to interview him or speak to him. It's been a sort of goal of ours since we started our sort of half-baked
media lifelong mission.
Career.
Now, when I was 14 and holidaying in Austria or Switzerland, I can't remember exactly.
It's Switzerland where he lives, isn't it?
Right, a little village called Vevey or something near Lake Geneva. So where would that be? That's around
that's,
there.
That's around that area.
Around that part of the world. Anyway, me and my sister went to try and find him because he used to have the house next to Charlie Chaplin's widow, Una.
Yeah.
Is she called Una Chaplin?
I don't know. Stop asking me for facts.
It's Bowie facts. Anyway, we did the whole fan thing. We were trying to search around and hang around his house and maybe get a glimpse of the man. He wasn't even there, I don't think. I'm not even sure if he still has that house. Anyway, so the fact is, listeners, that we are Bowie obsessives, you know. Pretty high-level Bowie obsessives, I would say. He means a great deal to us. And
Switzerland.
Yeah. See, I was right the first time.
Yeah, so was I.
Austria. It's not Austria. I was joking.
We've just got some self-doubt, which is what makes us so human.
Exactly.
Like, we know these things, but we just have that, you know, doubt.
Only an absolute idiot hole stroke fun face would think it was in Switzerland. Yeah. Anyway, so we got an email, though, an exciting email the other day from a Bowie insider. Goblin.
We think it could be Coggle.
Coggle.
The Goblin.
From Labyrinth.
It says, it's because James, our producer, got in touch with Coggle to see whether we could get access to Mr. Bowie. And Coggle sent the following email. David Bowie is definitely a fan of the pair of them. In fact, they might not know this, but they came within a whisker of interviewing the man himself at Glastonbury in 2000.
Oh.
Where we did the coverage for BBC Three, or was it still called BBC Choice?
Choice, as it was then, yeah. And Bowie was headlining that year, of course.
Long story short, David decided he wanted to do an interview right at the last minute before going on stage. He was given the choice of Adam and Joe or Joe Wiley. And he chose Adam and Joe. But then he decided not to do the interview at all. Shame.
Ah.
Anyway, Coggle says, I would love to get David to discuss the various merits of Stephen, but sad to say he hasn't done any interviews for the past 5 years, so it's unlikely.
That's true, isn't it? He's been out of the spotlight.
He's based in New York.
He's an elusive hobgoblin.
He really is. But he must do interviews when he puts an album out, mustn't he? He must do promotional
If anyone interviews. In the world doesn't need to, I would say it was Bowie. But yeah. Plus, he lives on the internet. He loves the internet.
What would we... I mean, it would be an easy interview for him because we'd both just pass out and be sick. There wouldn't be any actual questions, would there?
It would be probably. An awful interview. Can you imagine how awful it would be for him to be interviewed by us? How humiliating and tedious.
I mean, how many questions about Labyrinth can one man answer in the 10 minutes we'd be given him with him?
It would be dreadful. If he's got any sense at all, he's going to keep us at arm's length.
When you threw the baby in the air, were you frightened you would not catch it properly or you'd fall down?
Did you artificially stuff your packet to make it look larger, or is that your real packet in the tights?
Those are good questions, you see. Those are the two tentpole questions.
Why do you not sing Dance Baby Dance at your concert so much? Turn baby,
I've
turn.
I've gone blank.
You see, that's what
I'm
would
frozen
happen.
Up.
Three questions, that would be it.
Cornish goes blank.
Three questions about Labyrinth.
Buxton tries to steal something and punch him to get away. The interview ends.
Sneak out of his apartment, try and kiss Iman.
Security! Security!
Security! Was. Get the cars up here immediately. I don't know how these
does
two
his doorbell go. Wap, wap,
no, it's
wow.
confusing. They all make the same noise.
Do they?
Yeah.
Well, all his appliances.
Was.
They all go whiz up.
Was. Oh, I think the dinner's ready. No, that's the doorbell, sir. Oh, was. Is that the phone? Was. Is that security?
Never going to happen now.
Was. Is that the bath full now? Oh, I don't know what's going on anymore.
Coggle's probably listening, and now he's struck us off the list. Oh, the humiliation! Talking. Listen, it's Text the Nation time in a second, listeners, but I'd like to read you an email we got from a gentleman called Barney Bristow concerning last week's Text the Nation.
Barney Bristow!
Dear Adam and Joe, I absolutely love your show and podcast. Look forward to listening to them every week. I've never felt the urge to write until now. Suffice to say that the disgusting habit Text the Nation subject this week is really scraping the bottom of the barrel. He means last week, of course. Big time. Not funny, generally pretty disgusting, and just juvenile. Sorry, but that's what I think. If you're struggling for ideas, why not go back to asking listeners for subjects? Do I have any? No, don't ask me. What I do know, brackets, why not have a break from the whole featured for a few weeks while some new ideas are gathered? Just a thought, just a minor criticism of an otherwise great show that, brackets, generally never fails to make me laugh. Thanks and best wishes, Barney Bristow.
Bristow?
So he's being very... He's sort of stroking with the left hand and then and then slapping with the right one.
I thought he was pretty much punching with both.
Really? I like the way that every time he does a compliment, such as just a minor criticism of an otherwise great show that, brackets, generally... Mm. You know, he's being very conditional about his praise.
People get very critical at strange moments. Personally, I enjoyed last week's Texanation very much, although I got in terrible trouble because I talked about my wife in it.
You
don't
did.
Mention what I was saying.
And did she hear? It got back to her.
You know what? I felt so bad that I told her because I didn't want her to hear from someone else, right? So I said, listen, I talked about you in the show this week. Mm. Just to... I sort of raised it in a very matter-of-fact way, hoping she wouldn't really listen or hear what I was saying. She got upset.
You craved exposure. The guilt was too much.
Yeah. It was too much. I didn't want to get busted. But then also, it would have been fine, you know. But then during the week, like a couple of her, our mutual friends said, whoa, I heard Adam talking about you on the show. That was pretty disgusting. And so that wasn't good. Thanks a lot, disloyal friends.
Can you really blame anybody but yourself?
I did say... Please, I did beg people not to talk to her about it.
Right? So it's their fault.
For disobeying the beg.
That's correct. Good. Well, Barney, yeah, there we go. We're sorry that it disgusted you and you think that it was juvenile and you think that we're scraping the bottom of the barrel. But it's kind of true. It was disgusting, but in a fun way.
I don't agree with scraping the bottom of the barrel. I thought it was absolutely nudging the top of a golden barrel.
You think it was the best Textanation ever?
We got a very good response from people on that one.
Well, here's a new one that hopefully might be an improvement for you, Barney. Are we going to have a jingle to kick it off? Are we going to have the traditional jingle or some kind of exciting listener-made jingle?
Textanation classic jingle.
Okay.
Textanation. Text.
What if I don't want to?
Textanation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
So this week's Textanation, listeners, is all about personal superstitions. This is little games you play with your head, in your head, fatalistic games, kind of decrees you'll make as to how you'll fare that day. Uh-huh. I'll explain it by reading a couple of emails we got a few weeks ago. This one from a listener called Jo Falcon. She says, I listen to your podcast on my way to work. I always end up humming whichever was the last jingle I hear for the rest of the day. I have my own little superstition regarding your, but which one is the best jingle? Do you know that jingle?
That's the jingle we use on the podcast. We have a jingle that goes...
Adam's really great and he's wonderful. Joe is really, really, really brilliant.
They're fantastic.
But which one is the best?
And then
sometimes it goes, it's Adam. Other times it goes, it's Joe. So Jo Falcon listens to that and depending on what the ending is, she will kind of rate her expectations for the day. If it's Joe who's the best, then it'll be a good day, as that's my name too. If it's Adam, then I'm destined to have a terrible day.
Thanks a lot,
that doesn't reflect
Joe.
Very well on you, but it's just random. Yeah. Okay, and this is the kind of thing we're talking about. Little random things that happen in your day, and you will ascribe a sort of hugely important meaning to them. Like reading the runes, you know what I mean?
Or reading your horoscope.
Exactly. Here's another one from Josh Pappenheim. You say that in a dismissive way because you think it's completely meaningless.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, good. Just wanted to make sure I'd got that correct for the following 2 hours and 20 minutes. Here's one from Joe Pappenheim. While crossing the road, I realised that I never step on double yellow lines. I'll even go to the trouble to step very carefully in between the lines, even if it means stumbling and looking quite stupid. Maybe you could see, through the marvellous medium of Textanation, what other strange and awkward compulsions people have in their lives. So that's the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's reading enormous significance into some random little event your day.
It's called... it's a form of obsessive compulsive disorder.
No, do you think?
No, I'm joking.
But no, I personally do it a lot. If I'm in the kitchen and I'm grooving to some music and I flip a spatula really fast into the air, the thing, a thought will pass through my head that'll go, right, if I catch this by the handle... my life's going to be a success. If I catch it by the spatula end, I should give up.
Your whole life?
Sometimes it might be the day. Sometimes I don't have the time to think through the premise that quickly. So I tend to go for the whole life.
When things go wrong then in your life, like years later, if you fail...
I blame it on the spatula.
You think, damn it, if I caught that spatula by the handle and not the other end, the spatula end.
Spatula?
You know...
Yeah, that is exactly what I think.
If only... Oh, I should never have stepped on those pavement cracks back then in July. Otherwise, things would have gone right for me now.
Yes.
Is that what these people are thinking?
Yes.
No, it's not. But I understand it, though. It's nice to... What is the compulsion there? What are they trying to do? Are they trying to make their lives more exciting, or are they trying
to... It's just admitting that there is a certain randomness to the world, right?
Right.
It's sort of like the... what's that theory called about, you know, a butterfly lands on a plant and the sun blows
up? The butterfly effect.
That's it. It's like that wicked movie.
It was invented by Ashton Kutcher.
There you go. It's that kind of thinking, which admittedly, it's not brilliantly disciplined, rational or scientific thinking.
It's not rational.
But some of us, slightly less rational than Dr. Buckaloid, if such a thing can be imagined.
I am one of the most rational people on this planet.
Yeah. Emotionally centered and rational man. Some of us play with that kind of thing, you know.
What are you implying?
that you get angry sometimes.
Yeah, but in a very rational way.
Yeah, it's true.
Watch out is another little bit. It might be wicked. It might be one of the weaker bits. But that's cool. I like weaker bits. I can handle up to three.
It's exciting for Michael Jackson fans because he's playing some big gigs at the O2 Arena. Have you heard about them?
Is he still going ahead with them? I thought
he is. What he's done is he's delayed the first 2 weeks of concerts because he's not ready yet. Because the spectacle is going to be so extraordinary, he needs more time to practice with his prancer dancers.
I thought he was ill, poor chap.
Oh, no. He's extremely physically fit.
Is he?
Doctors say he's unusually fit for a man of his age. Uh-huh. He's in peak physical condition, depending on who you listen to. Some say he's in peak physical condition. Others say he's very close to death.
So not
it's
so
true. Hard. I'm giving both sides of the story. It's hard to know who to believe. It depends what tabloid you read.
Right.
So there's a lot of speculation about these big gigs. I feel the same sense of excitement that I did when those two men announced that they'd captured and killed Bigfoot. It just seems too improbable to believe that he will actually make it on stage and deliver an extraordinary concert. Do you know what I mean? It seems almost sort of weirdly impossible and fantastic that he would do such a thing.
Yes. Plus he's a living legend.
But at the same time... At the same time, the promises the promoters are making are getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
What sort of things?
That he's going to sing and dance.
Yeah.
You know?
That's insane.
These are ridiculous promises. And he's going to do two shows on a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to do a 3 o'clock and a 7 o'clock.
Is he really?
Yeah.
He's going to do a matinee?
Yeah, like a kind of Vegas, like a proper Vegas residency.
Wow.
And his shows happen, what, every other day for a year or something nonstop? Again, I'm not fully informed,
what?
But it's something like that. And they're selling tickets, very expensive tickets, hand over fist. But now any of his, you know, diehard Jacko fans who bought tickets for the first 2 weeks, their tickets have been bumped almost 6 months or something into like early next spring next year, March next year.
Whoa.
And now they've released tickets to new purchasers that are actually for dates before that date.
That's confusing.
It is confusing and maddening for people who've bought tickets because suddenly they're thinking, I shouldn't have bought the tickets for the early shows. I should have bought ones now and then I would have gone before. Do you know what I mean?
But if you can mess with any fans...
It's the Jacko fans.
It's the Jacko fans. They'll take nearly anything from their hero, won't they?
If you were Jacko and you were a little bit tired and you were really keen on getting the money but not quite so keen on doing the gigs,
yeah,
how would you do it? Like, I think he's quite likely to have a lookalike up there.
Oh,
with the hat pulled down, there are lots of brilliant Jacko lookalikes.
And people who could do the moves.
Yeah, I would pop a double in there. I'd have one on standby, wouldn't you?
The doble. Of course, that's a brilliant idea.
Well, he's got to do that. I would mime.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be doing no singing.
Certainly not.
I'd be doing the miming. I'd maybe do the opening song and the closing song and let the double take care of the rest.
Well, the thing is, when you've got big gigs as massive as M. Jacko will... People aren't going to be close enough to the stage to see what's going on anyway.
Exactly. Or they'll be looking at the video screens.
Exactly.
You shoot a video of the performance with the real Jacko in close-up.
Brilliant.
Then you sync it with the live show and you have the double on the live show. Ka-ching. Money hand over fist.
Very good.
Jacko's sitting smoking a fag.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In his house.
And the other thing you can do is a gorilla style. You can have some cartoon holograms and stuff like that. People love that sort of thing.
I haven't got tickets. I'm not going to go and see it.
No.
Because I think the whole thing is sort of has the fragrance of one of those secondhand perfume stores on Oxford Street. You know, where they pop everything in a bin bag and then run away. But I'm really excited to find out what happens. I mean, the first one's pretty soon, isn't it? The first gig. What's going to go down?
I don't know.
Can he possibly sustain it?
Hey, you know who
Will
knows?
Will Bigfoot appear?
You know who might be able to get close to Jacko and just hang out with him and find out more?
Who?
Thomas Dolby.
Why?
Did you know that he went round to Jacko's house once?
No.
Yeah.
Did he tell us this when we met him?
No, I read it. Andrew Collins wrote about it in Word magazine.
Wow.
And what was it? He was out in L.A. Oh, yeah, it was Steve Barron, with whom he did the Thriller video.
Right.
Did a video for Thomas Dolby. Steve Barron didn't do Thriller, did he? He did one of the other ones, I think. He did
a Jacko
Billie
video.
Jean, I think.
Right.
Anyway, and Steve Barron also did a video for Thomas Dolby, and somehow he got his telephone number. And one day, and so when Thomas Dolby got to L.A., he just phoned up Jacko and said, hello, Steve Barron gave me your number. Can I come round? Jacko said, yeah, sure, come round, Thomas. She blinded me with science. She blinded me with science. Come round, Thomas. It was something like that. So Thomas Dolby went round and and he said Jacko was sat on a big throne in the middle of a massive room. And it was all very above board and entertaining.
What, you think he would? Yeah, well, let's not go there.
Yeah, what's going on? What's the scene? Who the heck are these crazy guys?
Well, one's called Adam and the other's called Joe, and you're listening to their podcast.
Oh!
People have been sending us lots of Text the Nation jingles, variations on the Text the Nation theme. Beep, 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 Text the Nation. And here's one, an 80s sounding one. From Oliver, he says, after listening to the podcast this morning, I thought instead of sitting in the sun or talking to people, I would make a new Text the Nation jingle. Good decision, Oliver. Here it is.
Text the Nation, text the Nation, what if I don't want to text the Nation, but I'm using email, this is a problem, it doesn't matter, text.
You see, this is good stuff. This is very 80s, isn't it? It sounds like Visage. What was his name, the lead singer of Visage? Steve Strange. I can see a video for this where Vince Lipstick is surprised by his own reflection in mirrors.
Yeah.
You know? That's the sort of thing that happened in the 80s.
Uh-huh.
Who's that man in the mirror? He sounds depressed.
There's a lizard crawling on my face. What is the lizard doing crawling on my face?
It's a bit less enthusiastic than that, isn't it? It's as if he's been forced to sing, you know, in some sort of music, fascist music camp.
I've dropped my sprouts. Look at them there. Covered in bits of
hair.
Matter and hair.
That's good, though. Well done. Is his name Oliver?
Oliver. Thanks a lot, Oliver.
You really knocked that out of the park. here are some Text the Nations. The subject this week is magical thinking. Someone has said that's what it is. It's magical thinking.
Is it?
That's how you describe it. Yeah.
It's superstition.
It's as if the world is imbued with strange magical codes.
It's a nice way of describing it.
Here's one from Chris Glue in Wandsworth. If I get an easy run to work, e.g. the bus arrives on time, and I get a seat, I get worried then that some bad juju is on its way.
Right.
Kind of like reverse luck payback. So that's interesting, isn't it? So if he has a good journey, the day's going to be bad. He's flipped it round there.
Yes.
Here's one from James in Bath. I think it's called obsessive superstition. A not walking over three drains is what he does. Otherwise, that'll bring terrible bad luck. So every third drain, he has to step on the drain.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, these are all nuts, though, aren't they?
He says, keep up the average work.
That's very insulting.
Claire and Crew says, I pass an old chap on the way to work each day. That could mean... It's this interesting use of the phrase, old chap. If he says hello and comments on the weather, then it'll be a good day. If not, I'm in for a crippler.
But what's the... I'm still trying to
get your head around this.
I'm trying to get my head around what people are subconscious... Because there's usually a reason for human beings to do these
things.
Like trying
to explain this to Spock. I'm usually the Spock of the duo. It's funny to see you not understanding, like, random, emotion-driven logic. Here's another one, Doctor.
Yeah.
Hi, Adam and Joe. If in the morning I see 8.08 on my alarm clock, I know my day will be good, as it reminds me of the band 808 State.
Right.
And I'm expecting really good things to happen, Anthony and Cheltenham. So that's a positive one.
I would like, you know, I'd like to hear from a psychologist. If there's a psychologist listening, explain to me what human beings are doing. Are they trying to add order to their lives? Are they...
Okay, get this one.
Yeah.
This is from Matthew Adam Barry. I have always said the word toast after walking over three joined drain covers on a path. I've always done it since I was seven and I still do.
What the heck is that
about? Well, he's now so bound into that sort of superstition that he thinks if he doesn't say the word toast after stepping on three drains, then he's going to be in trouble.
But that's borderline OCD, though.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's what... we've got a lot of borderline OCD listeners in that case.
I guess OCD is when impulses like that get out of control.
Yeah, I think OCD is a bit more sort of...
well, that's
a
serious
bigger than that
thing. Yes, exactly. But those... Everyone has those little miniature superstitions, I suppose, don't they?
Mm.
But some people just have good luck is the other thing. And then they
So you do believe in luck?
Well... No, I'm talking
about...
You believe
in lucky people.
I'm talking about... I mean, it's just statistically, some things will go right a lot of the time
for
some people.
If you believe in the existence of luck, then we've got you.
No, but luck is how you describe just the way that things happen randomly. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Statistically speaking, some people will have a lot of things go right for them a lot more than some other people who, unfortunately...
You're talking about Ricky Gervais, aren't you?
That's exactly right, yeah.
I think Ricky Gervais never steps on three drains, and he always says "putati,
putati."
That's why his career's gone so well.
I'm gonna try that.
You gotta try it.
I like to listen to Adam and Joe, but I listen to the podcast, not the live show. I used to feel acute frustration because I couldn't join in with Text the Nation. But now my troubles have disappeared because Retro Text the Nation's here. And now my letter might be read out instead of thrown in the trash and forgotten about.
Now, Retro Text the Nation this week, listeners, is actually to be found in a slightly different place. To celebrate the launch of our new blog, we've popped it on there. How can people find it then, Joe?
They can log on to bbc.co.uk/blogs/ Adam and Joe, and you'll find all sorts of exciting stuff about the show and a way that you can contribute to that blog and this week's Retro Text the Nation, which is, we must admit, pretty revolting.
It's quite revolting, but it's good though, man. It would certainly make me chuckle. And it's got some very nice recipes on there if you're a food preparation fan.
So head to the blog, bbc.co.uk/blogs/ Adam and Joe.
Noises, beeping noises.
We like to encourage people to send us in the jokes, their jokes that they have made up, right?
Yes, it's important to realise for this segment of the programme, listeners, that these are listener-authored jokes. Or sometimes people are deluded into thinking that they've made up a joke when actually it's been in wide circulation.
It's doing the rounds.
Mm.
Should we have the jingle anyway?
Mm.
I'm a funny person, I often make up jokes. My jokes are more amusing than those of other folks. When you hear my joke, I think you'll find that you agree. Come on, you're all invited to a made-up joke party.
Yeah.
Some joke sound effects in there.
So these are jokes we've gathered over the last few weeks since we last did this segment.
Can I kick off by giving you an example of a joke that's too good? Because we get a lot of jokes that are too good.
Right.
Here's one from Tom in Oxford. How did Dracula find his way home? Bat-nav. Too good.
Bat-nav. Is that too good or is it too bad?
Well, it's somewhere there, but
it's
either
got a
way...
Foot in it. I'd say it's got both feet firmly in the too bad camp.
It's straddling
Bat-nav.
The camps.
I mean, that's just that sort of puffin joke, but cracker time, isn't
that's
it?
Right. That's right.
If you'd given me a couple of seconds, I could have thought of that one.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Here's like one that's genuinely good.
Okay.
This is
Thanks,
from
though, Tom,
Ben Wyborn, who says, how do you find Will Smith in the snow?
Oh, I had that one. It's amazing.
Look for the fresh prints.
Very good.
Now, that's good. Come on.
Or I would say...
But that's so good, you see, I think, well, maybe that's not made up by Ben. Maybe that's made up by by a joke professional.
Maybe.
There are, in China and India, massive joke factories
Yeah.
where people just sit reading the newspapers, batting around ideas, mm-hmm. formulating jokes.
They do that in America, though, don't they? That's how they write their sitcoms.
And then they send one man into to a pub in Shropshire, mm-hmm. and he says it to a man there. And then, but by the end of the day, it's all around London.
They test them.
And Britain.
You see, I wouldn't have put the, I wouldn't have used the word the, though. I would have said, look for fresh prints.
I had to read it out exactly as Ben sent it in, otherwise it would have been lying.
Really?
And abusing his trust.
Do you never edit any of the emails that are sent to you? You do
no.
sometimes.
Yes, of course I do.
Here's one from Mike in Deptford. Do you know about... I like the ones that start like that, conversationally.
Yes.
Do you know about the Antipodean prophet who absorbed the Ten Commandments?
Oh, God. You see, this is what we like, the really laboured setup. Now, hang on, read that again.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. Do you know the one about... He doesn't say, do you know
Yeah, of course I do. Of course I know about the Antipodean...
The Antipodean prophet who prophet. Absorbed the Ten Commandments. His name was Osmosis.
Oh, no.
Osmosis.
That's terrible.
Hey! Bang! We need a sound. We need a sound effect. Next week I'll have a sound effect. Or next time we do made up jokes.
I like the fact that it would be a bang or the sound of someone being shot.
Kabosh! For Mike in Deptford, though, that would be the sound of a nuclear bomb going off for Osmosis. And that would be that's amazing, Mike in Deptford. He says, love the show. Although I'm unable to join Black Squadron officially, as I'm an avid Digiforce member, sometimes I listen to the full three-hour show twice a week.
What?
Is this insane?
Yes.
Yes, it is, Mike. Thanks for the joke.
Here's another one from Armida Taylor, who says, this week I'm emailing you in with a joke all the way from Edinburgh, which this morning had my English... boss in tears of hysteria at our staff meeting. It uniformly raises a chuckle, perhaps at the expense of the people of Scotland. And it requires a Scottish accent for the punchline.
You're good at them.
What do you thanks? What do you do if you find a trumpet growing in your garden?
I don't know.
A rootitoot. Come on! A rootitoot. That's good.
Who's now that from?
Armida Taylor. That sounds too good to be true. Again, it sounds like it's formulated by... Put the puffin books
Rootitoot.
Or something.
Rootitoot.
That is good.
That's genius because it's a fun thing to say it's as well. If you've fun. Got a punchline that is enjoyable to say, Osmosis.
Rootitoot. Have you got another one?
Yeah, I've got loads, boy. This is from Luke at Northwest London. Why did the man in the office who told everyone to be really nasty to the secretary named Rachel...
Oh, this is good.
...get sent to prison?
Well, I know the answer. This is very good, though.
He was inciting Rachel hatred.
I like it.
Hey!
That's good.
He says, I hope you can read this one out just to prove to my girlfriend that she really should laugh and appreciate my efforts. All the best, Luke. Well, I think you're right, Luke. She should definitely appreciate your efforts. That's amazing.
Here's one from Alex Petrie. My colleague, Dom Jordan, came into work this morning claiming he'd made up a joke on his way in. He is not a listener to your show, the fool. However, I offered to send it on his behalf. Dom is adamant he made this one up. I'm not so sure. If you read this out, I'm fairly sure he'll start listening to you. Here it is. I heard that John McEnroe recently attended an interview for the new Harry Potter film. Upon completing the audition, he asked for some feedback, to which he was told, you cannot be serious. Come on!
That's good.
That's good.
But that's too good. I mean, I you know what? I read that.
No, I can think that someone would have made that up because, you know, you'd come out of the film, that villain's serious was good. Serious. He was a very serious performance. Yeah. And, you know, it would go from there.
Brilliant, brilliant. But I Googled that just to see if it existed. It doesn't exist in joke form, but there are many sites called You Cannot Be Serious with that spelling.
Right.
But I couldn't find any references to it as a proper joke. So, Alex, that sounds good to me.
What motivated you to do that?
Because I thought it was so good. I was curious to find out, like, if it existed. Why is that insane behavior?
It's not. It's fine. It's fine.
Here's a good one from Dan in Norwich. What do you call a Newcastle-based Ian Curtis tribute band?
I don't know.
Geordie Vision.
That's good. That's got to have been around, though, surely. Smash Hits must have done that one back in the day.
You reckon?
Not to take anything away from the author.
They've got dibs on Geordies. That's a very good one, Dan, in Norwich.
Mine are getting quite bad.
Do you want another very complicated one? Check this out. This is from James. He says, "This joke requires some background knowledge of British pop music from the early 90s, as well as a very basic understanding of Hebrew."
Oh, I love this one. No, this you can't read this out. This goes on forever.
No, no. "So far, I haven't found many people I can tell this joke to. Bill Drummond's pet dog started an Israeli pop group. They're called Kelev." Brackets, he explains, "Bill Drummond was in the KLF, and the Hebrew word for dog is Kelev. Thanks, James."
That's good. I like the ones that take really long explanations.
Oh, this is classic. Check this out. It's classic, man. Oh, no. This is so classic. Yeah, look at that. It's classic.
Now, I went to see King Creosote in London on Monday. It was a terrific gig, and he was supported by Pictish Trail, who is, of course, Johnny from King Creosote, with his own little setup. But a funny thing happened. It was in the 100 Club, which is quite a small venue. You know, it wasn't packed out, which was a terrific thing. They play quite a lot, King Creosote. So you always get those beautifully sort of balanced gigs where it's not too crowded and you can hear properly and see. Everyone was sort of huddled around the stage and the band, and there was a bit of space behind the huddle. And occupying the space behind the huddle were two ladies who had got chairs and sat literally a foot behind the furthest back person in the crowd and decided to chat about everything that had happened that week, all their problems, their families, you know, Sue, Binky, Madge, all their friends, what they were up to. And annoyingly, the music was, you know, drowning them out a bit, so they raised their voices so they could be heard by each other over the music. They had husbands. They'd obviously been bought by their husbands, but didn't really care about the band.
Yeah.
The husbands kept coming over, for, you know, backing out of the crowd, coming over and checking in on them, patting them on their shoulders, giving them beer, going, "You getting on all right? You're having a nice time?" And then go, "Yeah, jolly good, right, bye," and going off back to watch the gig. And they would proceed to go, it was driving me mental. I was thinking, how much longer can they, do these women have no idea where they are?
Yeah.
And but there were people, other people at the gig standing quite close to them who didn't seem to mind.
Well, maybe
so
just too polite.
I was thinking, maybe I'm just a pedant and everyone's much more relaxed than me. And come on, Cornish, chill your socks.
Come on, Jimmy Grumpus.
Have a slice of chill cake. Mm. And, you know, live and let live. Live and let die was more what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I wanted to go and give them what for. I waited until the very last song when Kenny, King Creosote, said, "All right, this is our last track. We've got to go." And then I thought, they were still talking really loudly. So I thought, right, you know, they need to learn. They need to know. Well, would you have gone over to them?
I certainly would have.
Fumigated.
My technique is always to move
away. Is that
the
right word, fumigated? No, what do I mean? Like,
fumigated.
Know, fumigated is wrong. It's when you...
with
when you
smoke.
Yeah. No, yeah. What do I mean? Like, you know, I was bubbling with rage.
Oh, you were fulminating.
Fulminating, that's the word. Yeah. So I crossed over to them during the penultimate song, and I sort of knelt down, and I really wanted to be polite. I thought, right, I'm going to do this, but I'm going to do it really politely.
Yeah.
But I was still angry, so I think the politeness might have come out as
passive
aggressiveness.
Oh, sorry, I spilt a little bit of aggression.
That's what happens, isn't it? When you're really trying to be polite, but yet you're furious, so it just comes out as awful, anal, passive aggressiveness. So I put my hand on her shoulder.
Whoa!
I know, and I said, "Excuse me, would you mind awfully not talking really loudly just for the last song?" And she sort of went, as if a sort of some sort of zombie was attacking her. She freaked out.
"I'm being arrested by Torpedo Commander Cornet."
And I said, and she said, "Oh my God, I'm dreadfully sorry." And I went, no, you're all right. Just be quiet, just for the last song. I said... And then I turned my back and I went back to my little cluster of friends with my back to them. So I didn't see what the immediate response was, but I got back to my friends and said, "What are they doing? What are they doing? What's their response?" And my friend said, they looked really shocked.
They're flicking
and just
V's
stood,
at you.
They just stood up and left.
Oh.
Because they were so sort of violated
by
me coming up to them.
And putting your hand on their
shoulder. Did I do the right
thing? Like a policeman.
Did I do that? Well, it was loud. They wouldn't have heard me if I'd just spoken.
Yeah.
And she was deep in another very drunk, tedious, loud story. Anyway. Woo! Did I do the right thing?
I don't know, maybe there's other
ways. I came away
of...
thinking I didn't do the right thing. That if I put up with it for the whole gig, I should have just left it.
The thing is, what happens is that I think people can sense it when your rage has been pent up for so long. Do you know what I mean? And it spills out suddenly. Like, it's better just to nip those things in the bud. As soon as they start
chatting. I should have gone over immediately.
Yeah, and just don't worry about just being a little bit curt and saying, oi, shut up.
But it was quite effective. I mean, I really freaked them out. I don't think they'll do it again.
Hello, Pete Doherty here. Just like to say how much I enjoy listening to the Adam and Joe podcast. Whenever life's got me down, it always brings a chuckle to my face.
Now, here's some info for you, Glastonbury info for you, listeners. If you would like to join us at Glastonbury this year for Nish... free tickets, then listen up, right?
When you say join us, you mean be at Glastonbury rather than help present the show.
That's true, I do mean that. I mean, I mean in the Glastonbury environs where we will also be. But don't touch us. No, you won't be allowed
anywhere.
We'll
be in a carefully fenced off high security BBC compound.
Compound, exactly.
So when we say join us, we mean you can sort of claw at the fence.
You can look at
whilst
the...
being poked with an electric BBC cattle prod.
Exactly. Every now and again, we'll come up to the gun...
Get away! Back off!
We'll come up to the gun emplacement and we'll turn the hoses on you.
If you're lucky, we might hose you.
That's about it. We'll throw you some buns. Anyway, it's going to be great this
year. I'm having my buns.
Okay, it's going to be extraordinary. Lauren Laverne's buns. It doesn't... what? And we'll be on air, I'm talking about Six Music, we'll be on air from Friday the 26th until midnight on Sunday the 28th of June. It starts on, our coverage starts at midday on Friday the 26th, incidentally. And we'll be presenting some shows along with Steve Lamacq. He's going to be there, Keris Matthews, Gideon Coe, Lauren Laverne. But here's the important thing. For a chance to be our guest... and win a pair of tickets, go to the Six Music website. That's bbc.co.uk/Six Music. All the details you need for applying for these tickets will be there. Don't forget the headliners are Neil Young. He's playing on the Saturday, I think.
Mm-hmm. Keep talking.
Bruce Springsteen is playing on the Friday night.
That's correct.
Blur are headlining the Sunday night.
It's an amazing lineup. I've got the lineup in front of me, and everyone you've ever heard of is pretty much playing live. Let me read out some of the less well-known bands. The Wave Machines are playing.
Excellent.
Jose James is playing.
Mm-hmm.
Kate Walsh will be on the acoustic stage.
She's very good.
The Cora Synth Band will also be on the acoustic stage.
What about some of the medium-sized bands that we would have heard of?
The Wombats.
The Wombles.
Tommy Sparks. Rumble Strips.
Is Tommy Sparks a real person?
Special Guests are playing.
Oh, I love Special Guests.
Yeah, brilliant.
That would be a good name for a band, though, wouldn't it?
I don't know. It could be a band. It's just special guests. Mr. Nice, Aqua Sky. I'm reading out all the lesser-known acts because they deserve a shout. There's a salsa class.
You remember when I said, can you read out some of the slightly more well-known ones?
No, I don't. I have no memory of you.
Okay, how about this? Could you read out some of the slightly more well-known ones?
All right. Calvin Harris DJ set. Japanese pop stars.
Oh, rubbish.
Bap Kennedy.
This is a taste of what you're going to get. At Glastonbury, all right?
The Big Pink.
We'd love to see you there. And we're going to figure out some way that we can identify listeners of this show, you know, whether it means...
Tony Christie there. You've heard of him.
Yeah, thanks a lot,
on the Pyramids.
Brilliant.
Stage.
Brilliant job.
Tom Jones.
Oh, God.
All the latest bands.
Whether it means that we ask listeners to this show to carry like a pink balloon or something, or, I don't know, some way of identifying yourselves. We're going to figure out between now and then. But go to the BBC Six Music website right now and find out how you can get those Glastonbury tickets.
Hi, this is a sexy woman, and you're listening to the highlights of the Adam and Joe BBC Six Music show. Ooh, this podcast has got me so hot. I'm too hot. I'm going to have to sit down and take off my cardigan. Ooh, I'm boiling.
We're talking about bad grammar in music, like in pop music. And here's a email from Owen Summerscales that came in the week. Dear Adam and Joe, just a quick email to further your musings on the grammar infractions of pop musicians. I'm sorry that this email won't get to you during the show as I'm listening in Vancouver, Canada. Wow. There is, of course, a fine line between simple poor grammar and plain idiocy. And so, therefore, I thought I'd provide you with a few examples that demonstrate elements of both. He talks about a song called If by David Gates, just to kick us off. Are you familiar with If by David Gates?
No.
Well, anyway, I don't think it matters, but he says it contains the line, "If a man could be two places at one time, I'd be with you tomorrow and today." Which, says Owen, of course is actually one place at two different times.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not difficult to do, to be with someone tomorrow and today.
No, that's entirely possible. So If by David Gates sounds like a sort of a pointless
the poor David music. Gates, he hasn't really got himself on the international music radar, but he's yet already being stamped on.
He might be very famous for all we know.
Before he's even got his foot through the door.
Anyway, here's a few more from songs that are more well known, at least to us. The Joker by Steve Miller, okay?
Yes.
You know that song. Contains the lines, and I'd sort of forgotten about this. I'd screened it out of my... Because sometimes songs are so good that you don't worry about the bad grammar.
Mm.
"Some people call me Maurice because I speak of the pompitus of love." And that's just a made-up word, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah.
It's sort of nice. It's phonetic and poetic. It sounds like a sort of a pompous clown kind of a person.
Exactly. Well, Owen says, "Steve Miller successfully manages to invent a new and particularly silly-sounding word, pompitus. I've no idea what it means, nor do I understand why someone should be called Maurice just because they speak of it. And perhaps, maybe it's French, you know?" So
I know. It's a thing I find when we're doing our Song Wars songs. I think, wow, it would be so lovely to write a song and not... have to be, and some of you may say that I do this anyway, but not have to be funny or not have to rhyme. Do you know what I mean? To be completely free form.
Yeah.
It makes it feel really easy.
Sure.
Just to write a sort of poetic, crazy Bowie style cut up song.
A bit of prose.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. That's a good one though. Pompitus. I mean, we might find out that it's a real word, but as far as I'm aware, it's not. He talks about a song, Owen, called Jailbreak by Thin Lizzy. Do you know that one?
Yeah, it's famous.
"Tonight there's going to be a jailbreak somewhere in this town," says Owen. "I, along with most others, would have to guess that the jailbreak would happen at the jail rather than somewhere else in the town."
What's the lyric again?
"Tonight there's going to be a jailbreak somewhere in this town." Probably
yes.
The jail.
They might have tunneled out.
You reckon?
And the tunnel might pop out anywhere.
But the jailbreak would start at the jail.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? That's
true.
Generally
maybe
where jailbreaks
more than one jail.
Happen.
Maybe there's more than one jail in the town.
Somewhere in this town, there's going to be a jailbreak. Right, I see multiple jails.
There's several jails. It's a big town.
That's possible.
Yeah.
Okay, that's possible. Owen points out that Killer Queen by Queen contains the line, "Gunpowder, gelatine, dynamite with a laser beam." He says, shouldn't that be gunpowder gelignite, unless you want to make some pudding?
That's a good point. Gelatine.
Gelatine.
Gunpowder and gelatine. You don't want to get those two mixed up. Otherwise, you'll plant jelly under the Houses of Parliament and blow up your kids.
Yeah, you get poison pudding. Gunpowder gelatine. He talks about Eddie Van Halen's "Why Can't This Be Love?"
Only... He's all from the same person.
Yeah, this is Owen. Owen Summerscales.
Owen,
he's,
wow.
He's on the case. "Why Can't This Be Love?" by Eddie Van Halen. "Only time will tell if we stand the test of time."
Well, that's just good.
He says, I guess it makes sense, but I don't think a school teacher would be too happy about it.
Slightly stating the obvious.
Yeah. Owen Summerscales, thank you very much indeed for pointing those out to us.
You know, do you think it would be harder work to find a song that is grammatically correct from beginning to end?
Right, that uses extremely exemplary grammar.
Yeah, amazingly pedantic grammar. I mean, that would almost be more of a challenge, wouldn't it?
Yeah, with loads of subordinate clauses and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Who is the most articulate and brilliant and educated lyric writer? Whose lyrics could you pass under the chin of or nose of the most pedantic teacher in the world and it wouldn't get a single red mark?
Morrissey's got some pretty good grammar in some of his songs.
Has he?
And The Divine Comedy, Neil Hannon's pretty good with his lyrics. And who else? Oh, the guy, Alex Turner. He's an amazing lyricist from the Arctic Monkeys.
Yes. But he's not averse to his colloquialisms.
No, of course. Anyway, we'd like to hear more examples if you can think of any, listeners.
Text the nation. Text, 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 text the nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
Just before we carry on with text the nation there, I should say that a few people pointed out that, of course, in the Steve Miller song, The Joker, he's saying, I speak of the properties of love, right? Not the pompetus of love. There's no such word as pompetus. Why would he make up a word? Owen Summerscales, you've let me and the castle down with your insane made-up word.
But again, we actually don't know the truth. We just accept at face value everything anyone sends us. So Owen sent us that. Out. We believe that.
Okay.
Someone else sent us a text saying that it wasn't that, so we believe that.
Okay.
You could tell us that the moon was made of Liz Kershaw's buttocks and we believe it.
Parts of it are, come on. The best parts.
That's true.
So Text the Nation this week is about...
Personal superstitions.
Right, right.
Yeah, verging on OCD.
That you're calling magic thinking.
Well, I think that's what it's known as. I'm not calling it. Someone, again, has emailed in and I'm taking it at face value and believing that that's the true description
of it.
That's
a nice way of describing it.
Yeah, but here is an email we got explaining it from a gentleman called Matt Turner. Dear Adam and Joe, I'm not a psychologist, but the root of superstition is fairly widely discussed and reasonably simple to explain, so I thought I'd give it a crack. The human mind is built for figuring out logic puzzles. For example, when I touch fire, fire is hot, therefore I won't touch fire.
That's my favourite logic puzzle.
When we transfer this into a scenario where there's no linking logic, for instance, if a black cat crossed my path, I then went on to fall down the stairs, I would link them in my head using faux logic of superstition, when in fact there would be no real logic to the link. So in essence, superstition is a misfiring of the very human response to find patterns in the world around us. Now, we did get a lot of actual emails from genuine psychologists, but I chose the one that wasn't from a psychologist to read out. I don't know. It's folk logic. See what I mean? It's more human. It's more real.
Yeah, down home.
It's the kind of show this is. Here's one from Jane. Dear Adam and Joe, we as a family each grab someone else's cheeks and shout squidge, squidge when driving over cattle grids.
Wow, that's very specific.
It is, isn't it?
Squidge, squidge. What's the logic there?
That's just a sort of a habit, I suppose. Yeah, She's not saying that anything bad is going to happen. But
is that one of the ones you read beforehand?
No. But, you know, she feels compelled to do that, so it's suggesting that something... She fears something might go wrong if she doesn't do it. She fears consequences if she doesn't do it.
Sure, yeah.
So that fits the brief, right? Here's one from Chris from Loughborough.
Squidge, squidge.
If I'm walking along the street and scuff my foot on the ground, I must then scuff my other foot as soon as I can to maintain the balance of the universe. I've done this for as long as I can remember. I shudder to think what might happen if I didn't do it.
Yes. Yeah.
Here's another one from David J. Whenever I go back home during the school holidays, our family always go to the same restaurant. I always have to have my ribs from left to right, and if someone takes something off my plate, e.g. a chip, it's going to be a bad month.
Bad month.
Also, before going into any exam, I have to recite the last lines of Blackadder Goes Forth.
Yeah.
When they're in the trenches before the off.
Oh, yes, yes.
So that's a sort of a personal superstition, isn't it?
I mean, have you ever been someone that reads horoscopes?
Only ever for fun.
Yeah.
But there is a little part of my brain that thinks they might, you know, that can't help but consider that they could be truthful.
Well, there are people who take them absolutely seriously.
Russell Grant.
Well, Rusty Grant with his...
Astronomers.
With his magic sweaters.
Astrologers,
yeah. I mean, the thing is that I used to know someone, I used to even go out with someone, whose day would be totally destroyed if her horoscope was bad.
Mm.
And she would just will the thing to come true, though. Do you know what I mean? Like, she would wreck her day. If her horoscope said, later on, your day's going to be wrecked, she would go, right, I'm going to start wrecking it right now by being depressed about the fact that my day's going to be wrecked.
Usually they go out of their way not to say anything explicitly negative, though,
no.
Don't they? Everything's so sort of broad that it could go either way.
But she would read all kinds of stuff into it. And, oh, my goodness.
Okay, here's one from Neil in Kent. Referencing your text, your Text the Nation topic.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to share my strange ritual regarding trouser belts. So I need to share it. I used to hold my breath when moving belts between garments. It never made sense. I try not to do it anymore, but for a long time it was a strange but very necessary ceremony.
Belt moving?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I did a thing where sometimes I like to hold my breath.
This is a good one.
You know, if I'm going down a corridor or something and imagine...
You're underwater or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If I'm in the Poseidon Adventure or something.
That's more like the previous Text the Nation on things to do to make life more
It's not
exciting.
A superstition, though, is it?
Dear Adam and Joe, I have a strange friend who was once standing on the up escalator at Angel Tube Station. As is sometimes the case, the handrail was moving slightly faster than the steps, edging his hand further ahead of his body. He decided that if he could keep his hand on the rail and not move his feet until the top, he should carry on going out with the girl he was seeing. He ended up almost horizontal with his hand way past the poor person standing two stairs up, but his unknowing girlfriend survived another day, says Richard Cricklewood.
That's so much.
Pretty perfect.
That's really magic thinking.
Yeah, it's tragic thinking.
Oh yeah, so funny, I forgot to laugh.
Now, Joe, did you hear that Microsoft are launching their own version of Google called Bing?
Yeah.
A big search engine.
They've had a big week for launches. They launched a new sort of controller-free console. They didn't actually launch it, but they kind of introduced it at E3.
Uh-huh.
And a strange sort of talking computer boy.
Who's he?
He's called Milo.
Hello, Milo.
Hello. Oh, you look sad. What's the matter?
Milo is recognizing your face. That kind of thing.
Oh, it is creepy. Milo,
it's definitely creepy. With that stuff, you think, what's the point? This is just an invitation for people to destroy the world in a Terminator-style apocalypse. And then everyone just... Is that why they're developing virtual reality? So that we can destroy the world and it won't matter?
Yeah, exactly. Time travel, then, they'll get to time travel eventually
It's all fine.
Punch Milo.
But what's
in the face.
Bing?
Bing.
It's a bad name, isn't it?
Well,
this reminds me of Friends.
This is the thing. It's all about the name. I mean, they are launching this new search engine with $100 million, either dollar or pound, it's a lot of money, advertising campaign to popularize it because they are absolutely livid about how popular Google is, right? Mm. And the fact, this is the thing that really sticks in Microsoft's craw, is that the word Google is now in the dictionary. It's become a word in its own right.
Of course.
To describe searching for something on the internet, right? I think it's a stupid name.
Well, does it do anything that Google doesn't do?
Well, it's got different kind of search criteria. It reckons that it comes up with
better results,
more accurate results,
really,
more extensive range of little associated videos and
Bing.
Interesting things.
And what that's like bingo? Because do Americans have the word bingo? They don't have the game, do
Not
they?
Not so much.
So they
do have bingo.
Would they say bingo as an expression of
triumph?
The
only person I've ever known to say the word Bing is Ned Ryerson. In Groundhog Day.
Ah.
Do you remember that character? Yes. He comes around. Hey, it's Ned Ryerson, you remember?
He's just after, before or after the puddle?
Just after the puddle, yeah. Or maybe it's when he's trying to get away from Ned Ryerson, he steps
That's
in the puddle.
Right.
Oh, Bing!
That's
Ned
right.
Ned Ryerson from college, you remember? Bing! And then, of course, there's Bing Crosby.
I think it must be the American for bingo.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Maybe you're right.
I'm definitely not right. But I still think it.
It's Chandler Bing from Friends. Anyway, they want the word Bing to be in the dictionary, meaning something you search for. Like, I binged you. Oh, yeah. I binged you the other day. They had
There's
going
to be one called Bong.
Right.
Stoners are going to make one called Bong in some American university, aren't they? They've
Probably.
Done it already.
Do you think Bing is going to happen, though?
I don't know. The thing about Google isn't the name Google. The thing about that was the simplicity. It was the fact that it was just the name and the window. And before then, you got all sorts of... It was like looking at the contents page of an encyclopedia, those engines, wasn't it? And Google were the first people to wipe away all the nonsense and just make it strictly utilitarian.
Yeah. Can you Bing that for me?
Utilitarian?
Yeah. Just Bing everything you just
Bing
said.
It.
I'd love it if you could just Bing the facts on that for me.
It's not going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Because
what
Google,
are the other...
Because Google feels like, you might go to prison for Googling somebody.
I know.
Do you know what I mean? It sounds like you're interfering with them.
Oh, let me Google.
And that's what you want to do with facts. You want to interfere with them. Get in there. You know, rifle around.
But Bing
you don't want
just,
to Bing them.
Bing is just one little flick. That's
it
like
sounds
a,
too singular, doesn't
it's
it?
It's a contemptuous flick.
Bing, Bing. You see, we're going to listen to this in a year and we'll sound like idiots.
Idiots. Absolute
Bing
morons.
Bing will be the king of the castle.
Because the other brands that have become verbs are things like Hoover, of course.
Of course.
You Hoover things, right? Sellotape.
Of course.
Tippex.
Yes.
Like no one uses, what's it called?
Whiteout.
Whiteout. Yeah. Correcting fluid. You know, you use the brand name for
Ridiculous.
Those things. But I was trying to think of other brands that haven't become associated intimately with what they do.
You've done a lot of thinking.
I've been thinking all week.
Too much thinking.
Like, could you make me a slice of Morphy Richards, please?
Right. Toaster. Yeah. It would be more like, can you pop this bread in the Morphy Richards? Is that what you're getting at?
No, I was trying to make it into a verb or a noun to describe the thing it does.
Very much sleepy.
That's all I could think of.
I got lost. You tangentialised too many times.
A slice of Morphy Richards.
You flip-flopped. I've lost the through line. I've got confused.
Bing!
Adam and Joe. Naughty. Ooh, my nipples.
This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. Weather check. Weather check. How's it going? Is it actually raining
it's
outside?
It's drizzly here in London. Yeah, but that's fine. It's have a cozy time.
Cozy time. I'm on my bike.
I'm on my bike. Yeah.
Don't you get
sound
it?
Like some alien sidekick.
I'm on my bike.
Oh, be quiet, Buckles.
I'm on my bike.
Go back in your cupboard.
And being Simon Pegg in Star sidekick. Trek.
Right.
What's his little rock man called?
Waffles.
Grumbles.
Oh, be quiet, Grumbles. Don't touch that, Grumbles. Oh, no.
Crispy cakes. He looks like a Rice Krispie cake, doesn't he?
They don't really give him enough screen time, but I think he's, anyway.
He'd be a good keychain, that chap.
Listen, we got an email from Steve in Beckenham. My girlfriend, Adam and Joe, often hums some random tune when she's pottering about. It goes a bit like this. La 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 da di da, di da ta ta ta, di da da di da. My mum does it too, and I've noticed middle-aged women do it a lot, although my girlfriend's only 28. When I ask what tune they're humming, they never know. I call it the mum hum.
Uh-huh.
Now, this isn't just exclusive to mums. I mean, dads do it a lot, and men do it a lot whistling.
Yeah.
And I do it a lot. If I'm just feeling happy, I will launch into a ba-ba-ba-bum, ba-bum, ba-da-da-da-da-da-da. I don't know what it is, that tune.
Oh, that's a very good song.
But everybody just, you must do it as well.
Yeah, of course.
It's a human habit just to launch in to a sort of instantly on the hoof composed freestyle jazz odyssey. But it's not even jazz. Some of them, sometimes it can sound like a sort of marching song.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a human habit, isn't it, to sporadically launch into a compositional mode.
Yeah.
The thing that I do sometimes as well is I start singing a song that I wouldn't be seen dead, listening to, like, da, 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 da. And then in my brain, I'm, oh, my God, I've started singing Agadoo. So I'll go, da, 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 da. Da 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 da.
What are you doing?
Because it's not Agadoo anymore.
Ah,
it's a different song.
Taking it into a different direction.
Yeah, that just sounds a bit like Agadoo at the beginning. Do you ever do that? What's that song?
That started out as Star Trekking across the universe.
It turned into something that definitely isn't that. What's your little song? If you're feeling happy, you might walk into a room and go. That's a good song. I wonder whether actual composers do that. Do you know, like Damon from Blur? We gotta fill this album. A bum bum ba da ba da da do 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 foo foo wah.
No talented people get tunes visited. Into their
brains.
Yeah,
I know, because that I do as well.
No, you know.
I do. I might wake up. Oh, that's amazing.
What, Agadoo?
What an amazing song about
Wow, I've written Agadoo.
You think talented people just... You think the quality of instantaneous composition, if you walk into... Oh, I can't articulate
this. You hear famous and talented people talking again and again, musicians, about the fact that they feel as if they're channeling music that arrives fully formed.
Of course, but this isn't when you're sitting at your piano or at your word processor.
Mm-hmm.
This is when you're literally just mopping the floor.
No, but that's what I mean. They get these tunes fully formed. Mm-hmm. Suddenly they just arrive in their heads.
As if we're not included in this. I don't understand your angle on this.
I've written a brilliant song. If I just change the words.
No, that's not what I was saying at all. I think in future, people should walk around with tape recorders and record those random little compositions, just in case. Because you never know. You might be a compositional genius, or your mum or your dad might be a songwriting genius just around the house and just not know it. You know, they're leaving pearls of musical genius.
Sometimes I
they're usually kids' cartoon themes. That's good. They're mostly oompa based, aren't they? Songs like that.
Anyway. I've recorded a few of mine.
Have you?
Yeah, because I have thought, like, on when you're walking sometimes, if you go on a walk that's more than about 20 minutes.
You mistook yourself for one of them.
Exactly. Hang on a second, I'm a bit like Brian Wilson. I should really carry around a memo thing. So maybe I'll bring them in. They're rubbish. And you listen back to them in a few, you know, in a couple of months, and it's... in G, and you've recorded it like...
I think next time you hear someone doing that, you should just rush up to them and go, oh my God, no, what was that? What was that tune you were singing? That was amazing. Quick, sing it again. Have you got a deal? Are you signed? Do you work for a record label?
Then you get punched in the chest,
yeah,
legitimately.
Just another day for me.
And that's the end of this week's podcast. Now here's a goodbye link.
Thank you. You've been wonderful. Throw me your dirty pants. I'll wash them and get them back to you. Thank you.
Well, that's it for the podcast this week, listeners. We hope you found something enjoyable in there somewhere.
And we've got some info for you right now. This is going to be very information-heavy for the next minute or so. So pens and papers at the ready, please.
But it's exciting because there's two new ways that you can interact with us via modern technology. The first way is via your telephone. Hmm. You can call 03700 100600. Now, you might have thought I would have said 100 instead of 00. It would have made it a bit jazzier, wouldn't it?
Try doing it the jazzy way.
03700 100 600. And you will get a little answering machine message from us, and then you can leave us any kind of message you want. Now, it seems to us that this is an invitation for...
abuse.
Abuse. But our producer, James, is confident that we will get articulate, interesting and usable stuff from this recorded line.
Yes, rest assured, any kind of abuse will be immediately screened out. Yeah. And
it's like emailing the Chinese government.
Yeah,
and we suppress all dissent.
That's right. That kind of stuff won't be used. But we'd love to hear anything creative that you have to leave there, or anything that you just want to get off your chest and tell us about.
Yeah, your contributions to Text the Nation, it could be, or any kind of feedback you want to leave us.
A poem, a song.
03700 100 600. Then you can also visit our brand new blog, which is at the Six Music website, bbc.co.uk/blogs/Adam and Joe. You can send pretty much anything to that, right? Little YouTube films, animations you've done, MP3 files, written messages, pictures you've drawn. It's kind of like what the gallery was to Take Heart. Mm-hmm. It is to this show. It's a way to display and share all your kind of creative contributions, and it'll be updated very regularly. Adam and me will contribute to it. It's going to be amazing.
Yes, we're going to contribute as much as we possibly can.
Plus, we're going to post up some little gifts for you, some little nuggets, some MP3s of Song Wars of yore to make it worth your while visiting. So do check in there every day.
Every hour.
Every hour. Every 5 minutes, just in case there's something new up there.
It should be a good way of using a lot of the stuff that we get sent, because we do get sent an awful lot of good stuff, and we both feel bad about the fact that we can't read out all the messages we get. So hopefully we'll be able to display a few more of those things on this blog.
It's going to become an amazing campaigning tool for important social issues.
That's right, yeah. And one final thing. I am at the moment taping this sitcom for BBC Two. It's about the advertising industry. It's called The Scum Also Rises. And because it's taped in front of a live audience, if you like, you can come and see it being taped at Teddington Studios. It's a bit of a schlep, but, you know, it's fun. And if you get there early enough, I think you even get a free drink in the pub next door or something. Go to www.sroaudiences.com to find out how you can get hold of tickets for The Scum Also Rises. Hope to see you there. But that's it for us this week. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back at the same time next week, 9 till 12 on BBC Six Music.
Yeah, have a great week and we'll see you then.
Bye.
If you enjoyed the Adam and Joe podcast, then why not try the John Richardson podcast? Download it now. bbc.co.uk/sixmusic.
I've got a bit of a sneeze. That was exciting.
I've got a cold.
Oh, that was really good.
Is that enjoyable?
Yeah, that's given me some pep.
You really contained that one as
well. Well, I thought I was going to do a big build-up, but then it happened prematurely. Premature sneezelation.
It's just wonderful, isn't it? It makes you feel great.
Sneezed all over the shop. No one expected it.
And you didn't... nothing came out as well, which was nice.
Yeah, that was good.
That's respectful.
Oh, it's made me feel good up my nose.
Spread the swine flu any more than it already is.